We do not have a quorum. We'll be in subcommittee, but we can at least start the hearings, and as soon as we get a quorum, then we, if we need to move bills, we will go into full committee. With that, I would like to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 641.
And Senate Bill 641 allows licensed physician assistant to give written certification for a person to be considered a person with a disability under wildlife laws.
All right. I'd like to ask Ben Johnson and is it Roy? Roy Elliker and Ron Angelon. Sure, Marshall, but your name wasn't on the thing. Okay, well, we'll have Marshall then in.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Marshall Koba, representing the Oregon Society of Physicians Assistants here today in support of Senate Bill 641. This bill is, we consider, a very straightforward bill, and that allows physician assistants who are to sign disabled hunting permits for their patients who are qualified to receive one of those. The Fish and Game Department has standards that must be met, and we are qualified and able to make the determination on who is handicapped and requires one of these permits.
Thank you.
I'm not sure what to add to it, actually. This he pretty much summed it up. It's
all right. Well, it's my understanding, I think, for the committee, we need to know that physician assistants practice medicine under the supervision of physicians and surgeons, and they shouldn't be confused with medical assistants who perform routine clinical and clerical tasks. Also, your duties are obtaining histories, performing physical examinations, ordering lab and diagnostic tests, assisting in surgery, and prescribing medications. You're trained in diagnosis,
mm-hmm.
therapeutic and preventative health care services, as delegated by the physician. Okay. One question I have is, because you're always in consult with a physician, would you be letting him know that you would be writing a certification for a person to be considered with disability under wildlife laws?
That would not necessarily be the case unless there was a question. The physician assistant does operate under the supervision of a physician, but on a daily basis operates autonomously. And in many places, such as a rural setting, the PA may be the only person working on a particular day. But with telephone, or at least telecommunication contact with the supervising physician.
Okay. Why don't you step down and we'll get Roy and Ron up here, and the committee may have more questions.
Morning, Madam Chair.
Good morning.
Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Roy Elliker, Deputy Director for the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, and on my left, Mr. Ron Anglin, our Wildlife Administrator, again, for the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. Appreciate the close cooperation between ourselves and the Physician Assistants Association, particularly Marshall Koba. We've been working together with Marshall on this bill. He came to us with this concept prior to the session, and we're satisfied that the bill adds an extra way for the public who would like to get a disabled hunting and fishing permit, gives them an additional avenue to get that. We recently went through kind of a large review of the program, tightened up some of the requirements, made it a requirement that every 2 years, a person would have to file to get disabled hunting and fishing permit. So with the tightening of those requirements, working with Marshall on allowing physician assistants to assist in writing for someone to get a permit, it fits right into the program for the department.
Wonderful.
Madam Chair, I really don't have anything I'd like to add. I'll be more than willing to answer any questions that the committee might have.
All right. Is the committee comfortable with this? I'd like to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 641, and I would like to open a work session on Senate Bill 641. Senator Courtney?
I move Senate Bill 641 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Chair Lori Montes Anderson.
Thank you, Senator Courtney. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition to doing this? So ordered. And I'll carry the bill since I'm the chief sponsor. I'd like to close the work session on Senate Bill 641, and I'd like to open a work session on Senate Bill 531. Shannon.
Senate Bill 531 increases the number of physician assistants on the Physician Assistant Committee from 2 to 3, removes pharmacists from the committee, clarifies the authority of the Board of Medical Examiners to license physician assistants.
Excuse me.
And we first heard this on February 19th. There was an amendment that would remove the pharmacist position, so it, in effect, increases the number of physician assistants on the committee without increasing the number of positions on that committee.
Okay. Marsha Koba, Ben Johnson, and Ted Ruback. And we discussed this. There seem to be no problems with it, but we do have an amendment before us, and I think the amendment will be... If you'd discuss the amendment, we are in work session.
Marshall Kova, representing the Oregon Society of Physician Assistants, Senate Bill 531, as staff indicated, pretty straightforward. We do have a dash one amendment, which removes the pharmacist, adds one physician assistant, so it remains at a five-member committee, and we'll then have three physician assistants and two MDs on the committee.
And you looked through the amendment, and it was worded correctly. Yes.
That's correct.
All right. Is there any comments from Mr. Ruback?
Yes.
And Ben Johnson. Yeah.
Chair Montes Anderson. My name is Ted Ruback, and I'm here representing the Oregon Society of Physician Assistants as well. In terms of background, the few committees that the Board of Medical Examiners has, we are the only profession that is not represented in equal numbers with the with physicians. The Board of Medical Examiners was quite comfortable with this, but preferred the option where it wouldn't increase the total number of members on the committee. So, therefore, the recommendation with the amendment is that we drop the pharmacist. The pharmacist was originally placed on that committee in the early days of our profession when we worked under a formulary where the pharmacist's input was pretty important. We no longer work that way. Our laws have changed over time, and the assumption would be is that the pharmacist perhaps has less of a role on the committee at the present time. So we're going to replace that with another physician assistant, providing a ratio of three PAs to two MDs.
Great. Any other further comments?
No further comments.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I move the dash one amendment to Senate Bill 531.
Senator Gourley moves the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 531. Is there any discussion?
I just want to know what it is. Again, I'm struggling here to find my amendments.
It's the it should be right after the SMS and before the bill.
Okay, I'm fine. Thank you, Chair.
You sure?
Yeah, I'm just winging it here. Great.
It actually goes, yeah. It actually decreases. It was 7, and now there'll be 5.
Actually,
it stays the same.
It stays the same, but you've reduced the bill from 4 to 3, I believe, in terms of...
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Because we're adding 4 physician assistants now.
No. You've reduced the 4 to 3, right?
Oh, I'm reading the main bill and not transferring.
That's what I'm...
I might have staff...
Yeah, I didn't mean to mess you up.
Write it in for me. Okay. There are now total seven. And how many are physician assistants?
Chair, Mona Sanderson, there are five members total on the committee, which is a continuation of five. Mm-hmm. And we have deleted one and added a physician assistant. So we have three physician assistants and two MDs.
All right.
The deletion is the pharmacist.
That's correct.
That's correct.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay. Is there any opposition to the amendment? So ordered.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 531 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Gurley moves Senate Bill 531 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any opposition? So ordered. And I'll go ahead and do this one, too. I'd like to open a public, or I'd like to close this work session on Senate Bill 531, and I'd like to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 678.
Senate Bill 678 authorizes the supervising physician of a physician assistant to designate another physician as agent to temporarily supervise physician assistant.
Okay, Marshall Koba, Ben Johnson, and Ten Ruback. I'm getting the names correct now.
Madam Mona Sanderson, the purpose of this bill was to strengthen the agent concept. Has always been a very important part of our practice in Oregon. As PAs, we must be supervised by a supervising physician. At times where the supervising physician is not available, we've always had the ability to have that supervising physician assign another physician to temporarily, for a predetermined period of time, play the role of our supervising physician in his or her absence. This bill is just to strengthen that in statute so that the agent concept is clearly defined in statute, which supports the rules behind that. Did we also mention the licensure part?
And then if you could, yes.
Just a clarification on the word. It's a little difficult to hear the term that you're using. Are you saying agent?
Agent, yes.
Agent, all right.
Agent, yes.
Thank
I'm
you.
Sorry.
No problem.
And again, for the record, my name is Ted Ruback, here representing the Oregon Society of Physician Assistants.
And we have an amendment, the dash ones, and
yes.
I would like to have that clarified, why the change was made.
Primarily, if I might, Chair Mona Sanderson, is that this was at the request of the Board of Medical Examiners to clarify this a little bit more. It actually uses the same definition that we use in rules in statute, so it just basically equalizes across from statute to rules.
Correct.
Yeah, it made it more consistent with the current OAR.
Go ahead and introduce yourself.
I'm sorry, Ben Johnson, Oregon Society of Physician Assistants. This made it more consistent with the current OAR. Something had been lost in the translation through legal counsel. And so we made this amendment, which is supported, to our knowledge, by Board of Medical Examiners.
It actually clarifies it because, and it enters the predetermined period of time.
That is the issue.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Is there any further questions? All right. I'd like to close a public hearing on Senate Bill 678, and I'd like to open a work session on Senate Bill 678.
Madam Chair, I move the dash one amendment to Senate Bill 678.
Senator Gordley moves the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 678. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? So ordered.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 678 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Gordley moves Senate Bill 678 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any opposition? So ordered. And I'll just take care of all of these PA bills. I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 678. And I'd like to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 676.
Senate Bill 676 prohibits an insurer from refusing a claim on the basis that the claim was submitted by a physician assistant rather than by a supervising physician. And it repeals a sunset on the law, Oregon Laws 2003. And in your packet, you'll find the text of the Oregon Laws 2003 that just shows the repeal in Section 2, it says would be repealed on October 4th, 2009, so this measure would delete the sunset.
All right. Again, Marshall Koba, Ben Johnson.
Ben Johnson, Oregon Society of Physician Assistants. This is a, we have had this for some time in rural areas, this mandate. We have come back on with it several times due to sunset clauses, and to my knowledge, it has always passed without any opposition. What we're asking this year is to remove the sunset and to extend this from just rural areas to all areas.
Thank you. I spent some time last night with the insurers regarding this bill, and they say they're already implementing it. They have no problem with this bill, and so there truly is no opposition from anybody who might, and I was feeling that maybe the insurers might be opposed to this because it appears like it's a mandate, but they say they are all already doing this. Okay. Is there any further discussion? I'd like to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 676, and I'd like to open a work session on Senate Bill 676.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 676 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Gordley moves Senate Bill 676 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any opposition? So ordered. And I will carry this one. And we will close the work session on Senate Bill 676. Okay, I would like to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 363.
Senate Bill 363 requires DHS to establish a consumer advisory council within an organizational unit of DHS that addresses mental health services, requires DHS to establish the Office of Consumer Affairs within an organizational unit of DHS to address mental health services, promote, provide training and technical assistance to consumer groups. It would require that OCA to provide networking and technical assistance among regional consumer groups, establish the Office of Ombudsman for Mental Health Consumers in DHS, and require the DHS director to appoint Ombudsman for Mental Health Consumers per the availability of funds.
Okay. And just as a reminder, committee members, we only have 8 more sessions before we have to have all of our Senate bills heard. We have over 200 assigned to our committee, so that's why it appears like I'm rushing through this, but there are such good legislation we want to address that hopefully you're doing your homework before you get to the committee somewhat. Okay, I would like to call Bob Nickel and Gina Nickel. Oh, and Senator Morissette. First, Senator Morissette.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. Senator Bill Morissette, Senate District 6. This is a good set of bills. Thank you very much for the hearing, and I'll turn it over to the experts. I won't take any more valuable time.
I'm getting a reputation.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bob Nickel. I'm an assistant director for the Department of Human Services, and my area is the Addictions and Mental Health Division. I'm here to testify on Senate Bill 363. And then, I'm sorry, I probably didn't listen well enough. Is this also a time to testify on 364? Are you going to do that separately?
They're related. So I'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 364 also, and so we can be more efficient.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, I want to testify taking a neutral stance, officially speaking, on Senate Bill 363. I say that first, but I also want the committee to know that I am very supportive of the concept. I actually initiated the Consumer Council that I'm considering putting into statute. Long after I'm gone, I hope that the bill passes and that no matter who's in my position, we have a Consumer Council. The reason I wanted to have this was that there was no place where I could hear completely unfiltered by any other people, the consumer voice in the state. I have to tell you that this consumer council, which has now been meeting for over 3.5 years, is probably the livest discussion that I attend in all the meetings that I go to. We've talked over things like the role of consumers in helping set up and implement mental health courts. That's not something that was automatically something that many consumers were comfortable with. It involves potential coercive treatment, and one of the things that came out of that, it was a recommendation, a number of mental health courts have followed this, to have a consumer representative on the steering committee or advisory committee for mental health courts. So that's just one example. We're also looking at the fact now that 20 people with major mental illnesses, according to a number of studies, die 25 to 30 years before their peers. And so there are whole issues of lifestyle, the role of medications, the role of smoking, the role of lack of exercise, the role of being often in institutional settings. All of those issues go into a really complex issue, and I'm really finding it a valuable and rich discussion. The only concern that I have about the bill is that it's not included in the governor's recommended budget, and that's the reason I have to take a neutral stance, but I'm very, very much in favor of this bill.
So would both Senate Bill 363 and 364, I'll need to have you describe 364, need to go to Ways and Means?
I believe it's three.
Just three,
Madam Chair.
Just 363.
That would need to go. The other bill I can testify in full support of, Senate Bill 364, which would require us to have 20% membership on bodies be consumers. The only concern that's come up on this one, and I know there's work being done to try to find some amendment languages, consumers under the age of 16 and families are not sure how this would relate to them, and I understand there's language that's been being crafted. I don't have that today, but I would like to suggest that the committee consider the possibility of one amendment there. The other issue in Senate Bill 364 is that it would require the Department of Human Services to develop a self-determination policy. I already have adopted a recovery policy. Self-determination is part and parcel of that. I'm very supportive of adding a self-determination policy. So I'm in full support of Senate Bill 364. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay.
Chair Mona Sanderson, committee members, for the record, my name is Gina Nickel. I am the executive director of the Association of Community Mental Health Programs, and I am here in full support of both Senate Bill 363 and 364. My association has taken a long, hard look at these. I want to tell you, as you know, that the Consumer Council already exists. It has been invaluable to the community system. And what I mean by that is they actually invited me to come sit at the table and listen to them. And that's one meeting that I make sure that I go to every time that it meets. I learn more and more each time that I'm there. The interaction is very, very helpful, and I would love to see this in a statute. So we're very supportive of this bill and believe that it should pass. 364, the same thing. Self-determination is something that we have strived for a long time, and it would be nice to have it in writing. I want to give credit to Becky Childs and David Rompre, for they have helped teach me, and I've been in the business for about 25, almost 30 years. They have helped teach me that they're not consumers, they're not patients, they're not clients. They're people who use our services. And who better than the community that basically has them come to us? How can we describe people who use our services different than that? That's why we're here, to serve them. And so I just really appreciate the work that the Consumer Council has done, and pray that you take a look at these.
Wonderful. Shannon, you said that the amendment that was on 364, but what was...
They withdrew it. They're fine with the language as is, and that was coming from NAMI and Trillium.
Okay. So do you think we still need
Madam Chair, members of the committee, if NAMI and Trillium are comfortable, I'm comfortable. That's fine.
One question, please.
Yes. Senator Carter.
In Section 4, Subsection C, it says to evaluate the efficacy of supporting evidence for and desirability of available mental health services with respect to the persons receiving the services. Does that mean scientists will be a part of this commission so that when data comes in, we can expect it to be data that is evidence-based?
Madam Chair, Senator Carter, the way I read the bill, the Consumer Council would essentially make those kind of decisions. My office will provide them with any kind of data that they would request. I should explain that the way the council has worked, and there's nothing in the bill that speaks to this, is that the council sets the agenda. I don't. If they want an issue talked about, we talk about it. If it's not something important enough to them to talk about, then they don't. If this is in the statute, I know that they would ask for data to come in. We would make whatever resources available, including research personnel from our office and outside our office, to come in and speak to those issues.
Thank you.
Yes, Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Fully supportive. A small concern. I think there is legislation in this building to create, I think, at least four different ombudsman positions in various aspects, and I think we may need to take a look at how I mean, I think you have one, I believe, don't you? Or mm-hmm. Okay, and we've got a bill coming to the floor to create an ombudsman position for foster care and dependency. And I guess my concern is, what sort of matrix are we setting up here? It's just a concern to make sure, because all these things, number one, cost money, and we just need to make sure that what we're doing can be in some way coordinated, because all valuable positions that are, how many are we going to do, sort of thing. I mean, just the concern. Mm-hmm. So,
do you have a comment on that, Mr. Nichol?
Madam Chair, Senator Cruz, and other members of the committee, I guess my comment would be, because of the stigma of mental illness and because of the risk to people's civil liberties, I think there's a strong case for there being an ombudsperson for people with mental illnesses. I absolutely agree that it needs to be coordinated, because people with mental illnesses become older, and we sometimes end up in foster homes, and so there has to be some coordination mechanism. I couldn't agree more with that.
Okay, follow up. Mm-hmm. For example, I mean, as we debated the ombudsperson for the foster care system, the final decision we made was that it will be in the governor's office, housed in DHS, but in the governor's office, so there's a direct link and accountability in the executive branch. So, I mean, that sort of structure, I think, is something that we maybe ought to take a look at as well.
Thank you. And it looks like the people that are wanting to testify on both bills, there are people that are wanting to test on both bills. So first talk about 363 and then talk about 364. So Megan, is it Cahey from Benton County, and David Oakes from Eugene, Lane County, and Martin Rafferty from Lane County, if you three can come forward. Oh, yes, please. Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Bill Morissette, Senate District 6. I wanted to wait until my constituents were here. I think both of these bills are extremely important. We heard them last session. There are a lot of survivors of psychiatric medicine. There are a lot of people out there who need a voice, a constituency, someone that they can talk with about the problems, and I think you've just heard from the two experts in the field of mental health. And I truly feel that both of these bills are worthy of your consideration, and there are a lot of people here to testify, so I won't take more time, but I just wanted to turn it over to my friend David Oakes here, who is the expert in the field from Lane County.
Okay.
Thanks, Senator.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Morissette.
Wow.
And for your persistence, Senator Morissette.
Yeah.
Right. Thank you very much. I'm proud to be here with, I think, about 20 people with psychiatric diagnoses today, mental health consumers, and psychiatric survivors. I'm David Oakes, David W. Oakes. I'm director of Mind Freedom International. And I am here to support self-determination of Oregon's mental health clients. This is a statement of support of both Senate Bills 363 and 364 because of their great benefit to Oregonians diagnosed with psychiatric disorders. A lot of us call ourselves mental health consumers or psychiatric survivors, and Mind Freedom is a nonprofit based in Eugene that unites human rights groups internationally. At this very moment, the governor and legislative leaders are calling for building new psychiatric institutions, huge ones, that may cost $400 million or more. Whatever the decision, the wisdom of the decision, pro or con about that, we're not here for that today. But we as a state have not yet decided where to put all the cans of ashes of us who are in the state psychiatric facility. We're still trying to figure out where to put those cans of ashes from the last psychiatric institution. With very few exceptions, right now, the state of Oregon has essentially zeroed out all funding to support the statewide voice and self-determination of mental health clients. These are things like statewide conferences and mental health consumer affairs that most states have. But for the last 4 or 5 years, Oregon has essentially zeroed out funding for that statewide voice. Mental health clients, according to research, are among the most disempowered and marginalized of Oregon's citizens. Current mental health research shows that our empowerment and self-determination are crucial for true recovery. So Oregon needs to hear from mental health clients. The story behind these two bills starts with years of statewide work by Oregon's mental health consumers and psychiatric survivors. A federal grant called Real Choices for Systems Change enabled mental health consumers and psychiatric survivors from throughout the state to meet and choose principles and goals that became this bill. About 2.5, 3 years ago. So this is a crucial step forward. These bills provide support for a client advisory council that is already meeting to advise the state mental health system, and this would provide support for that. These bills give legitimacy to that effort and make a statement that Oregon wants to hear the perspective of clients of the mental health system. Most states now have an Office of Mental Health Consumer Affairs. But not Oregon. Having a state employee who personally experienced being a mental health client would provide an important and efficient bridge to determine and support the goals of the state's mental health consumers. Having an advocacy system can help mental health clients gain a sense and a reality of dignity and justice that's so important for real recovery. These bills also establish an ombudsman position similar to that for senior citizens and nursing homes. We are a constituency that can be forcibly drugged by state law. Oregon is one of the easiest states for involuntary electroshock, though thanks to Bob Nickel, that's in the past, but Oregon still, by state law, is one of the easiest states for involuntary electroshock. We can be tied in restraints. We can be put in solitary confinement. Of all the constituencies that need an ombudsman, I think this constituency really deserves to have somebody who's hearing them as an ombudsman. Among those who work on all disability issues, there's a powerful and famous slogan, "Nothing about us without us." That is, when a task force or a board or a commission or a committee meets to make decisions about people with disabilities, then, of course, people with disabilities ought to have a voice in the process. Today, if there's any kind of decision about disabilities, you'll see someone in a wheelchair there. You'll see a blind person there. Well, these bills require that a minimal level, 20% at least, of these mental health committees are from the mental health client communities. These bills do not seek substantial resources. The mental health clients statewide who designed these bills purposely kept the funding to an absolute minimum. It's about principles. The principles we are interested in are not
only about funding, as important as funding is.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, Senator Carter.
I just want to interrupt you long enough to tell you. You see this group up here?
Yes.
This is the choir.
Oh, good. Good.
This is the choir.
Excellent.
Okay?
Yes.
So we know what you're saying.
Okay.
This is the choir.
Yeah.
And we want you to have your bill.
Good. Very good. I'm glad. I'm glad. Yeah, in a way, this is a signal to people that there's hope.
See, we know.
Yeah, good. Excellent. Well, that was the conclusion of my statement. If you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer them. I myself am a psychiatric survivor. I experienced abuse in the mental health system as a college student 31 years ago. I have provided you copies of the National Council on Disability report, that purple report that you all get. My friend Ray Unziker told me, as she died of cancer, she said, "This is my legacy." She got the National Council on Disability. So choirs need ammunition.
That's
and
right.
This is your nonviolent ammunition is the
and I think the middle person is a very good piece of ammunition.
Pardon me?
The middle person. See, our young person.
Yes, here. Yes. I'm very proud of Martin Rafferty,
yes.
From who's our new office manager at Mind Freedom. Yes, great. Indeed.
Okay.
Thanks.
Either one of you.
My name is Megan Cahay, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Thank you very much for this opportunity to testify on behalf of Senate Bill 363 and 364. I am the face of part of who this bill will go to help. About 32 years ago, I was diagnosed with schizophrenia, and over the course of the past 32 years, I've been hospitalized over 100 times, received several courses of electroconvulsive shock therapy, and insulin coma therapy. And now I'm working as coordinator of the Band of Empowered Advocates Reclaiming Self-Determination Peer Advocacy Training Project. So these bills, especially 363, would have a lot to do with my life and with the lives of the people that I work with and my peers. And these bills mean a great deal to people like me and to me. Having a consumer advisory council would mean that my needs and my peers' needs are heard. And having an Office of Consumer Affairs would mean that our interests would be taken into account, and this would change lives. And in my life, I've known discrimination. I've known the effects of the stigma of mental illness, and this is something I want to see changed in my lifetime. I'm working to change this. I'm so happy that you're the choir. And this makes me feel very, very good, because it's going to take all of us to make these changes happen. So I'm glad that I can count on your votes for this, and I appreciate your support very much. Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming. And I think that even though we are the choir, we have a lot of noise or a lot of music that we have to make to reach the public, to bring dignity to those who have mental health. You're all very precious, and you're all very valuable to our society. So thank you.
I appreciate that.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Martin Rafferty, here representing Mind Freedom International. I also have a long history, as long of a history as I could have, working with youth in Lane County. currently employed with another youth nonprofit. So I feel that I'm here representing some of the youth from Lean County. I have a speech prepared. I'm going to try and not make dramatic pauses as was suggested to me to speed it up. So please insert your own dramatic pauses. As I said, my name is Martin Rafferty. I was a consumer of many different medications as a youth. Many of those medications were designed to deal with problems that I did not have. The fact that I did not need the medication and the fact that my doctors decided to give me more than three times the dose that was clinically suggested changed my life forever. Depression, suicidal thoughts, and profit were all in order. For months, my family described me as zombie-like. My grades and my social activities all became poor. I frequently thought of suicide. Something that I'd never had before taking these medications. I isolated myself. I became verbally abusive to those I loved. And once again, all of these things that I was doing were that my doctor was saying that this is okay, these are side effects. So the reward margin was thick for profit. Profit was given to my doctors, to the Eli Lilly, the companies that gave me my medications, companies that are supposed to pay taxes to Oregon when they're made to, when they're not getting out of it. The state of Oregon could have done more to stop what happened to me and many other people. They didn't as of yet, and now an unlit beacon is before you. Described as the bills 363 and 364, and the two bills will simply say that we're worth it, that the voices of the consumers are worth it, and that they're valued. And once again, as David said, these bills will hardly touch the tip of the iceberg of what needs to be done. They are not answers. In the very least, they're acknowledgments of the pain of what's happening in our community and our state. The answers will come from the victims of these companies, and you won't get to say that you assisted in these answers because you did not. You simply will obtain the knowledge that you helped stop the oppression, and at the end of the day, that you supported your citizens and empowered mental health consumers. So thank you very much, and I really hope that you are the choir, and thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. The more we can do to empower you, the better. I'd like to call Rick Snook and Maxine Purcell, Maxine. Those are the last two to testify on Senate Bill 363. Oh, no. Here we go. Yeah. Oh, yes, we have a lot more. Okay. Or is it Marie? Marie, I'm so sorry. I need glasses. Go ahead.
Okay. Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Rick Snook, and I'm from Portland. I'm an employee and former board member of Empowerment Initiatives. A few years back, I was responsible for opening the first new brokerage in response to the Staley settlement for people with developmental disabilities. I also have a diagnosis of depression and post-traumatic stress disorder. People who experience mental illness are seen in a certain light by their community. It's not a flattering light. We are held responsible by many for their illness. We are thought by others to have some kind of moral defect. Some people look at us and say, just quit acting crazy. We endure incredible prejudice and stereotypes, even from those who have sympathy for us, and even from those who are paid to provide us with supports. These supports are not just so minimal as to be absurd. They are delivered often in a paternalistic manner that completely overlooks the individual's authority in their own life. I didn't always have the mentally ill identification. After getting my master's degree, I worked for quite a while providing services and supports to people with mental disability labels. I considered myself normal. Truth be told, I thought I was two or three times as normal as the average person. I thought I was immune. You probably think you are immune. You are not. Odds are that mental illness will touch you or your family at some point in your life. For me, the change came when my teenage daughter committed suicide. Now, there are some parents who lose a child, and they may live with a broken heart for the rest of their lives, but they don't crack. I cracked. Maybe it was something about holding my dead child in my arms, the chill that came from her body, the scream that came from deep within my body, or just the fact that I can't see her in my mind anymore without seeing her dead. Whatever it was, maybe you will see this as a moral weakness in me, but my world was destroyed that day. Before you judge me, take a moment to picture your child, your beautiful little girl, dead by your own hand and lying in your arms. So I joined the mentally ill. I am no joiner. I tend to shy away from labels. One of the first things I learned about my new status was that I was no longer in charge of my own life. One of the things I think we're doing right at Empowerment Initiatives is that the EI board and its staff is composed of people who experience mental illness. This gives us a perspective we would not otherwise enjoy. We are also people with a lot of other experience. We are lawyers and executive directors of corporations. We are social workers and activists. And we all believe in the concept, the imperative, that everyone should be given the basic respect of making the important choices in their lives, including how resources are used to support them in living life to the fullest. Traditionally, the delivery of social services, whatever model, whatever facility or place, is a process that robs the individual of his or her basic self-respect. If you tell me what I need and then give it to me, you reinforce my helplessness. At the same time, the services you provide may be wide of the mark of what I really need. If, on the other hand, you ask me instead of telling me, you will get an answer that will absolutely be more on target, and I will keep my self-respect. The brokerage system, as illustrated by Empowerment Initiatives, is giving people experiencing mental illness the chance to move beyond helplessness into a world of choices, authority in their own lives, and the freedom to dream. Brokerages are all about asking and about helping each individual to reach their own goals rather than goals set by others. I have been on both sides of the system that treats and supports people with mental illness. It isn't working, but it's not just broken. It is underfunded to a horrific degree, but it is not just fiscally bankrupt. Its soldiers are burnt out, but it doesn't just need a heart transplant. It should have collapsed under the weight of its own silliness years ago. What are we to do? We are called to give everyone the basic dignity of making choices about their own lives. Self-determination in social services, in this case services for those of us with mental illnesses, is not just a fad. It's not just a model of the year. It is something really new, extremely simple, and like my teenage son, it cries out, duh. Ask people what you need, what they need, before you give it to them. Simple. It's the only way you can help others in a respectful manner. It is the manifestation of basic respect for the humanity in each of us. It throws pies in the face of every bureaucracy it meets. If you take one thing from my testimony, hear this. People who have mental illness are just like you and just like me. We all deserve an opportunity to make the decisions that are important in our own lives. We deserve the dignity of defining our own success. Thank you.
Very powerful testimony. And my heart goes out to you for the loss of your child.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Madam Chairman and members of this commission, can you hear me? Is this okay? I thank you for letting me come make testimony today. I was signed up for both of them, but I guess I'll speak to both of the bills at the same time, if I may.
And please introduce yourself.
My name is Marie Parcell. I'm from Benton County. I'm a founding member of Band of Empowered Advocates Reclaiming Self-Determination, which began about 3 years ago when a couple of other people and I were thinking, hey, we need to set up advocacy. We're still trying to set up training, and we're doing public education in our community. I am very much in favor of both Bill 363 and 364. I'm trying to remember which is which, but the one that is for ombudsperson, I don't think one ombudsperson for the whole state could take care of all the different issues. I think this is a very important area. To the best of my knowledge, one county in all of Oregon has an ombudsperson for mental health issues. for people dealing with mental health issues. One county, Lane County, in all of Oregon. It would be nice to have one for the whole of Oregon. I also believe that people who are affected by the decisions of an organization should be have a voice in that organization, or of a committee, or of a group. And that's why the 20% is very important. I'd like to see it stated by the state. I'm jumping back and forth between the two of them.
Okay.
I know. I'd like to see it stated by the state that they believe in recovery and people determining what will happen in their lives and how they will be treated themselves, since people know what they need. And having it that a statement by the state in that favor, even though it's more of a philosophy than it is a funded mandate, is very important, having it in writing. I also know I have been off and on, because there's a time conflict between two groups, I have been on the state consumer survivor advisory group, and they do great work. And I'd like to see it guaranteed to continue, no matter who, you know, is in office. Bob Nichols has been so supportive. I'd like to see it guaranteed. And if that is guaranteed, that would be an important part. And, you know, perhaps I'm forgetting what the other one other thing on the 363 is. But we need these bills to pass. And I thank you so much for even considering them. And I hope that you really are in favor of them, like you say, and we'll pass them. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your testimony, both of you. Drake Eubank, Bambi Lee, and George Akulidit. Akulich. I'm so bad at names. I know you as George. Drake, do you want to start?
Sure. Madam Chairman and the members of the committee, my name is Drake Eubank. I'm the operations manager for a nonprofit in Springfield, Oregon that's owned and run by consumers. It's called Safe Incorporated. I've been up here to testify before about what we do, so I won't waste a lot of people's time. We have, right at this moment, about 24 peer employees. We have 7 of those people are credentialed and provide credentialed billable services under Medicaid. We just recently obtained a Medicaid provider certificate from the state, which means that we provide a full range of services and can open clients on our own, which is a very big step for us. We sort of got tired of waiting for the administrative processes to make a place for us, so we went out and did the work ourselves. We now have a psychiatrist that works for us. We have clinicians that work for us, and the peers design the services that are basically put in and implemented. Anyways, I'm sort of here to represent a constituency that doesn't really have much political capital, and hopefully we're not going to take too much of yours to represent our interests. I'd like to say one thing about the exclusion from the governor's budget, since no one has mentioned it so far. The original package that was presented to the governor was mixed in with a $4.75 million, I think it was a supported employment for pilot brokerages, and it was excluded. But the amounts basically that this bill would take, 363, probably represent less than 10% of that amount. So we have a feeling that it kind of got taken out along with everything else at that point. So I don't know if that rationalizes it or if that, but it was not really allowed to be put in on, to stand on its own. We're not sure that it had enough significance. And I don't think we have a good ear in the governor's office, so I really appreciate what Senator Cruz said about having some connection with it, because there is an underrepresentation in that area. Things I would like to talk about are basically terms that you might have heard that tend at this point to drive a lot of the processes that services are delivered under. And their source is a source of some mystery to a lot of people in the mental health system, but it's not much of a mystery to the people that actually receive the services. Words like recovery, trauma-informed services, community-based services, person-centered planning, advocacy, strength-based assessments. All of these terms did not come out of the colleges or universities, research, clinics. They came from the consumer movement, and they came from actually years ago. Recovery started in the early 90s, and it's only now getting traction as an instituted policy of the health system. I would like to add one more set of terms to that, sustainable practices. And I would like to give you, rather than some nonviolent ammunition, I would like to give you some better music to take to the larger legislature for the choir to sing. I just passed out, hopefully you got a letter from the Consumer Council. It's addressed to the directors of the health plan, Bob Nickel, and I think the medical director at that time of the Office of Mental Health Services. It basically asked for an investigation into the effects of some of the new atypical antipsychotics. We had a facility, it was prompted basically by a facility in our area that had 12 people that were exiting the state hospital pretty heavily medicated for a long period of time, and every single one of them had type 2 diabetes. And I guess this is the important thing to me, is that people who are consumers can see on the ground level what affects the people that they're, you know, representing their constituency. We could see weight gain. We could see adverse health consequences. The things that Lilly ended up covering up, and they've come out since in this just the New York Times articles, where people were gaining 66 pounds. 22% of the clients that took atypical medications in their studies were gaining 66 or more pounds. We saw people gain half again their body weight in 2 to 3 months. And nobody was really doing anything about it, and nobody said anything about it. The Consumer Council 2.5 years ago wrote that letter asking them to look into those things. This is an example of a place where people who know the business, know what it's like, know what the people who are receiving the services feel like, can inform the process, the political process that you have. And if somebody listened to us earlier, they wouldn't have been quite as surprised when those exposed items came out in the public press. And it certainly didn't surprise any of the consumers, because they were watching their friends basically having their lives shortened, having health complications. And the instance of diabetes, I guarantee you, is a lot higher than the 17% that the research studies say is essentially the rate at which people who are taking atypicals are going to get it. Anyway, so I don't want to take up too much of your time.
But I want to follow up on that. There's another bill in Senator Morissette's on prior authorization, and they have wanted to carve out mental health drugs. And this is, and I'm one of those sticklers that truly believes that we need to have evidence-based studies looked at regarding the various effects of the mental health drugs and their side effects. So this is just adds fuel to my story that we truly need to have studies done on these medications and their effects on the consumer.
Well, they went ahead and released the drugs without doing that, or without actually publishing enough of the studies that were done. The one thing that we're interested in is the advocacy piece, where rather than wait for the FDA to get its act together, wait for a larger agency that has more regulatory and other interests than simply the well-being of the clients. We were hoping that the system itself would be responsive enough to take proactive action, and that's what we did as a council. I mean, that's our value. That's what we bring to this, and we think it's a real value, along with all the other things I mentioned. These are things that are actually driving all of your services now, and because we're not Microsoft, we couldn't patent it. Otherwise, we'd own the health system by now, because they're using all of our terms. And, you know, we don't have a political representation. We don't have a voice in the government. We don't have a voice in the DSHS. And if somebody took the trouble to actually make that so, I think you would find it very, very useful part of your agencies, and certainly cost effective. I mean, I can't tell you how many things that are peer run that are less expensive than anything else that I do.
Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Yes. Senator Carter.
I just wanted to say that, say to you, sir, that you do have a voice in DHS, and that's Dr. Nickel. You do have a voice in this government because you have us, and many of us have been here for a long time. 22 years ago, when it wasn't even popular to talk about it, we were talking about it. Mm-hmm. We stopped legislation for it. I just don't want you to discourage the choir that is with you.
Madam Chair, if I may add to Senator Carter's remarks, this is a good time to share with you that we do have a mental health caucus in this legislative session. I serve as co-chair of that caucus along with Bob Junedeff, who is executive director of the Oregon Advocacy Center. We're going to be hearing from their representative shortly. That mental health caucus meets on Thursdays from 8 to 9 a.m. in room 343. We have 12 lines for call-ins for people who can't be in the building but who want to call in. They can do that. We have our third meeting coming up tomorrow. This is an opportunity for information sharing, strategizing around moving bills in this session, bills that are focused on reform and the changes that we want to see, including the bills that we're talking about right now. And I want to just say again in a different way, that, you know, we must be the change that we want to see, collectively speaking. We must be the change that we want to see. And I understand that, and we understand that, and want you to understand that as well. And your testimony is so valuable, so valuable. And all of those who have come before you, thank you.
Can I make one small additional comment? Mm-hmm. There is no consumer agency or... since they took the technical assistance out of the budget in 2003, mm-hmm. there hasn't been a consumer agency in the state. That those duties have fallen to people that have terribly large amounts of responsibilities anyway. And I just wanted to mention Becky Child, who's sick, who's not here, who helped author the bill. Roland Shelton. These are people who have spent hundreds and probably even by now thousands of hours of their time trying to maintain the services that we're hoping that the state will fund at a very minimal level. And I just, they should be given some credit for keeping this alive while a legislative process could at least recognize its value.
We, if I may follow up, Becky Child was with us just a few days ago and had the opportunity to honor her work publicly and on the record. She's a wonderful champion, if you will.
And for the record, Becky Child did submit some written testimony in support of Senate Bill 363 and 364. And mm-hmm. Colleagues, we have them in our...
Yes.
They are with us. Thank you. All right. Bambi?
My name is Bambi Lee. I'd like to address that... I'm not sure how to address you, Madam Chairwoman and the committee.
That's perfect.
And I'm also an employee slash consumer survivor of the Safe Incorporated mentioned in Springfield, Oregon. And I'd like to say that I also am a consumer council member, among a few others. And I'd like to ask a question. Why does it take a crisis to create the outward help from beyond to help a situation out? Why does it take a crisis for someone to reach out? If it hadn't been for the years of mental illness and mental challenges that I've had, I wouldn't have gotten to the point in 2003 where into my life came this Safe Incorporated that I had no idea of who they were, and I was in a crisis situation, and they opened up doors and they allowed me and my family to become a member of their establishment and to open up. Why is there not help out there more so like that? My immediate family wouldn't even know how to begin to describe what it is that I go through. My child is the one that says, "Mommy, you're ill right now. Mommy, you need to take your medicine. Mommy this, mommy that," or whatever. Why is it so hard to have agencies out there that are willing to listen and lend an ear as a friend or as a confidant. I have a prescriber that I go to, and you know what? I hardly ever see her, and you know why? Because when I go there, I've been there in tears before, saying, please help me. Please tell me what's going on inside of me. And I don't have the answers. I have prescriptions. I don't know what... I'm prescribed with... schizoaffective bipolar, and I would say look it up because I only know it when I'm going through it, and you only know that, which like my immediate family, they don't know how to. It's all they know is it's a mental illness. I'm not mentally retarded. We're not mentally retarded. We're mentally challenged. We need to have a voice outside of our own voice. They're supporting us like SAFE has been supporting us. And the mind freedom. I told David Oakes that mind freedom, I had it in my mind a while ago. Mind freedom from misery is love. Love is mind freedom. Reaching out. The pills. You know what? My medicine half the time doesn't even work. And I'm being told, you're fine, you're fine. And half the time, you know who sees that? My boy. I hide it. Because I have no one to share it with that really can understand. And then it reflects off on him. We need like a respite place, like SAFE, or like Mind Freedom. I've got a family now outside of my own family. I talk to and release more to my outside family than I can without a stigma or misunderstanding than I can with my real family.
You have articulated it that very well, more better than I could have, because I truly believe we need, like you said, I call them mental health crisis teams and safe havens for families and patients to go to. And I know in the last interim we've been working on a community mental health plan, and we have a lot of work to do. But those ideas, your ideas, yes, you're lucky in the Lane County area to have that. And we need to be expanding and making sure that we have these and the public knows about them.
Beforehand,
exactly.
That's right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
George.
Chair Mona Sanderson, for the record, my name is George O'Coolidge, here on behalf of the Oregon Advocacy Center. Bob Junedep, our executive director, asked me to testify on his behalf. I have passed out his written testimony, so you should have that in front of you, so I will be very brief. But the Oregon Advocacy Center strongly supports Senate Bill 363 and 364. Both would enhance Oregon's efforts to improve our public mental health services by recognizing the knowledge, the experience, and the value of individuals who are or who have been recipients of these services. It makes sense that the experience of consumers of any service, whether it be public or private, should inform its operation. The Oregon Advocacy Center has a consumer advisory council that is invaluable in setting goals and policies for our program serving individuals with mental disabilities. So DHS and Oregon will similarly benefit from a more established consumer voice and consumer-directed services within all sectors of our mental health system. So I would encourage you to support Senate Bill 363 and 364.
Thank you very much. Questions?
Thank you.
Okay. David Romprey, Chris Folke, and Terry Fuller.
I was named first, so.
Okay.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is David Romprey. I'm a member of the Mental Health Court of Marion County as a peer advocate. I'm on that court because of the grassroots and meeting with Bob Nickel and the Consumer Council several years ago, and like he said, one of the outgrowths of that was the voice of the consumer and what was needed. And I'm on that court. We meet every Friday, and you know, last week, in the middle of the session, as we meet with Judge Graves and the DA, Walt Biglow, we're looking at supporting someone. That's before we go out and Judge Graves gives the order for a person. We're looking at how to support them in the week. And I said to the group about one individual, why don't I just meet with the person for coffee to talk about his goals in the week? And there was silence. Marion County Mental Health Treatment Services are there also. Well, that's a great idea. And it worked, and it wasn't thought of. Well, that's the voice of someone who came to this town in 1989 in handcuffs and was committed to the Oregon State Hospital. And I'm alive and well, sane as I'll ever get. And I definitely support this bill. And as briefly as I can in support of it, so much good has already been said. I'll say this. Well, read the Statesman Journal. A guest opinion is coming out. They took my photo in a couple of days. I'll give you the preview here.
Hand it to Josh right here, and he'll hand it out.
My quick premise, which has already been so supported by everyone else here, is that you have to hear from the customer if you want something to work. This guest opinion that I'm submitting is essentially saying bigger is not necessarily better. And how do services work except if you hear on a regular basis from the customer in any kind of a venue? And so, in drawing your attention, I'd like to have this be group participatory, and I'd like one of the honorable senators to volunteer to read the bottom of this page where the paragraph starts, the State Hospital Master Plan Community Work Group insists this is a matter of reordering the values. I'm an appointed member of that work group. Does someone want to read that quote and the two bullets underneath? Do I have a volunteer from one of the good senators?
Oregon's mental health services must be developed with values that support individual recovery. Recovery is possible and is the goal of all mental health services. Treatment and supports must be consumer directed.
And so I just ask you then.
Services must be evidence-based. Safe and affordable housing is key to recovery. And services are cultural and age-specific and trauma-informed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I want to just go back to the first page and look at those two bullets again and ask you how do you want for the services and supports to be directed by the consumer so that we can share the ideas of what works and what doesn't on an ongoing basis? And all due respect to Senator Cruz, I'm so happy that the foster care situation is presenting their own advocates. Let's look at a line being formed. I'm glad they're finally getting representation. We're adult consumers, and we need to be in that line so we can show what works. I want to ask you, how do you want that value to be supported, that treatment supports continue to be consumer-directed and not only industry-influenced and directed? Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Hello, my name is Chris Folk from Corvallis, and I've been a mental health consumer for over 35 years, and I'll be graduating next month from the mental health system, just a short year after, along with my doctor, tapering off of the major psychoactive drugs that I was taking, and going on a megavitamin mineral fish oil regimen. And that was recommended by my doctor, and I've taken a lot of steps further into just really good nutrition and healthier lifestyle. You know, there's a lot of important aspects to that. And found out that in Oregon here, in Corvallis, in Oregon State University in particular, we have a pioneer in this field, Linus Pauling, who actually authored the, it's a school of medicine. It's called orthomolecular medicine. It's based on the reality that we're all biologically individual. And I think this needs to be brought into the conversation. I'm also a producer in that I work part-time. I do as much as I can, and I do a lot of important and worthwhile education and advocacy work. I've been a member of Bears in Corvallis. And right now, I think this is a heady time in the mental health field. We had a conference earlier this year in Portland. It was called Alternatives 2006. It's the annual mental health conference of various organizations. And it was an incredible, life-changing experience for me. And one of the big strains in change in mental health is the idea of, you know, consumer involvement and consumer-driven mental health care. And these bills would be a big step in that direction. Also very important that we all need to work on is education and empowerment of people with mental health conditions, and realizing that we have charge of our own health and we can get better. We don't have to just be medicated and housed. And there was also a conference in Eugene just before the Alternatives 2006 on mental health, human rights, and the various people there talked about innovative counseling and therapies and psychotherapies, which could really help too. There's also important alternative health approaches, which are not currently embraced, but I think some of the mental health systems are starting to interface with. It's interesting, in as early as mid-1990s, there were approximately 450 million visits by American people to alternative health care practitioners, compared to about 390 million to traditional medical providers. And so I think the mental health system needs to recognize that there's this strain out there of people that are going to these alternative health people because they're getting help there. They're getting some dramatic help. And if we can bring this into considerations in the mental health system. In my particular bailiwick has to do with using megavitamins as quote-unquote drugs to dramatically improve a variety of mental symptoms. And Linus Pauling did some, a lot of people have done groundbreaking research in this area. And there's this this notion that there isn't a basis or research behind using natural nutritive therapies for mental illness. There is a certain amount of research which should be validating the use of vitamins, you know, vitamins A through F in just basic mental health care, and also powering more research into those areas. And I think that and if this was integrated into the mental health system, that thousands of mental health consumers in this state would dramatically improve. You would save billions of dollars, and you would incredibly reduce the load on the mental health system, enable a lot of people that are currently in hospitals to go home, reduce the residential facility load, and also, extremely importantly, be able to more effectively address the huge mentally ill component in our prison system, which is not being serviced well at all. Julian Bond, one of the great civil rights leaders, said that the best spokespeople in any given situation, an inequity or a situation where there is oppression, is those people themselves. They seem to be able to speak very adequately for their needs and concerns. So I just really thank you for considering these bills, and I hope that they can be passed.
Thank you very much.
Yes. Madam Chair and Senate committee members, my name is Terry Thaler. I represent mental health consumers in Benton County. I'm a member of the peer support group and advocacy group, BEARS.
I was, I'm in favor of these two bills, obviously. And I was diagnosed as schizoaffective bipolar relatively late in my adult life and lived for many years as a so-called normal person. And that's okay. I think it's funny, too. You know, I don't mind laughing. And, you know, I think that there are a lot of people, you know, for whom that may be true, but I have used both the established mental health system and also alternative methods of treating whatever symptoms I may be having at any given time, and I've had good results from both approaches, and I know that there are a lot of other things that can be done for people who are presently institutionalized or who are in prison, and to help them rehabilitate them that is not being done, and that if it were made part of their treatment plans, sometimes they don't even have treatment plans, but if they did, they could possibly be rehabilitated to the point where they're not such an expensive burden on society that, you know, there are other ways of looking at this whole field of endeavor of treating the mentally ill in society. And so that's why, even though it's hard for me to speak in public sometimes, I have come forward and said this to you, because I really feel strongly that this is good legislation. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Questions?
All right. Thank you.
The last person I have on this list is, or two people, I guess, Karen Cormack-Jones and Karen, is it Peterson? Is there anyone else that wanted to testify? Thank you. And colleagues, this is only a public hearing. I think that Mr. Nickel had sent me a report via email last night on the report on the interim, what the interim community health task force did. I can't remember the name. So I think if one of those could be delivered to me, I know it's 75 pages, if I could have that, and then we'll be talking, trying to coordinate things maybe in the Mental Health Caucus and trying to figure out how we should move forward on these, because there's obviously a need and obviously morally we should be doing this, and so we need to coordinate to see how we want to proceed.
Madam Chair,
yes.
If I may just add to your comment, the report that you reference is the subject of our agenda in the Mental Health Caucus tomorrow.
Wonderful.
So we'll have Bob Nickel presenting as well as Gina Nickel presenting
great.
As well.
All right. Thank you.
Hi, Madam Chairwoman and members of the committee. I haven't done this before. My name is Karen Cormack-Jones. I live here in Salem, and I'm here to testify in support of Senate Bill 363. I'm not used to preaching to the choir. I'm used to being in a confrontational environment. We need this bill because it's my experience that there are currently no safeguards for consumers of mental health services. It's been 3.5 years since my son was abused by an unlicensed and apparently unsupervised psychologist in a large HMO. Multiple laws were violated regarding psychologists. Yet my complaint to the Oregon Board of Psychologist Examiners was dismissed. I thought that there was something odd because obviously laws had been broken, so I started checking into their disciplinary action rates, and my husband, who's very good at statistics, suggested that I look at their number of consumer complaints versus the number of complaints which resulted in disciplinary action of any type. And between 2000 through 2004, that's a 5-year period, this board received 293 consumer complaints, and only 13 of those resulted in any type of disciplinary action. I thought that was very odd, especially when I started investigating other boards. I found a lot of information from the health licensing office. They had statistics anywhere from a low of 26% disciplinary action rate for respiratory therapists to 146% for one category due to multiple violations. Midwives, for instance, have a 50% rate of disciplinary action. The Board of Nursing has a 33.7% rate of disciplinary action. So my experience was if you file a consumer complaint with this board, the Oregon Board of Psychologist Examiners, you're basically throwing it down a long chute. 4 months later, we received a letter telling us our complaint was dismissed. Everything's done in secret. The deliberations, if there's a hearing, we had nothing to do with it. We weren't there to refute or offer facts that we had compiled to prove our point. It's as though, I don't know, they take the person into a room and say, did you do this? And the person says no, and they say, okay, you can go. As far as I know, that's what happens. I have no idea. It's all done privately. We weren't even given a reason for the dismissal. I had to make a formal request and then wait 3 more months while they deliberated as to what they could tell me, which my attorney told me was ridiculous. A consumer complaint is treated by this board as being just more work because they're completely funded by their own licensing fees, and they don't have a big staff. And so they're not protecting the consumers, even though their website says they are, and they're obligated by law to protect consumers. They're not. So I have done everything I can do. I've exhausted. Like I say, everything's been a confrontation. I filed another complaint with the insurance division, which at least opened up a dialogue between my family and the HMO. I started writing to a reporter for the Ohio Plain Dealer newspaper. His name is Ted Wendling. He did a huge expose of the Ohio Board of Psychology in 1999. I have a copy here if you would like to read that. But in your spare time. Mm-hmm. It's pretty scary stuff. Don't read it before you go to bed. My attorney tells me that I would need to file a writ of mandamus through the courts to force this board to do what it's already legally obligated to do. I have talked with a representative of the governor's office in February 2006. I gave you the latest email I received from her, which was last May of 2006, and I haven't received any response from any of my emails or phone calls since. So I guess that's another black hole. I've contacted my state legislator. I've contacted all my federal representatives, Darlene Hooley, Ron Wyden, Gordon Smith. The Secretary of State's office tells me that while the law requires them to oversee state boards, they only oversee the way they handle their finances. They don't care, or they're not legally obligated to do anything else. So there's no one out there for someone like me who says, hey, the laws were broken, my son was abused, and there's nobody. So we need some type of person who would say, oh, okay, well, you can try this, and I will help you this, or you can call these people. There's nothing out there. And as I said, this fox guarding the hen house, the numbers speak for themselves, 13 out of 293. What happened to those 280 people whose claims were dismissed? Representative Berger has told me that the governor's office received 9 complaints about this board, and I don't know from what date to what date, but apparently the governor receives these things, but they're unable to act on them because there have been no changes made. So I think that's all. If you have any questions.
And thank you. And I think that it's extremely important to get on the record, too, that when there has been an abuse of a child, it has to be reported to Child Protective Services.
It wasn't a physical abuse.
Okay.
I don't wish it had been, but
no.
Yes, that's what we're in this funny gray area.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
This testimony, and thank you very much for the testimony, raises an issue for me again that we've talked about before in this committee. I believe this testimony makes a case for why we need to get the health licensing boards, all of them, into our not just looked at in the ways and means process, where we're looking at fee structures and having some conversation about performance measures. We need a more substantive look at what's happening in all of these boards, and ideally we would have all the health licensing boards in a committee like this, where we can have a more robust conversation that is about checks and balances and how it's really working, and we can really drill down and ask some of the hard questions. That's been missing in this process from where I sit for and I'm also addressing the Senate President as I'm speaking here. So with an eye toward how we structure committees, again, looking towards the next session, I would hope that we would look at where we place the health licensing boards, and I think there's 12 or 14 of them, and that we look at some more standardized approach to the kinds of questions that are asked, the kinds of reporting that's required, the looking at audits that may be required across the board, that we be more systematic in our approach to how we're looking at the health licensing boards. That's just a strong concern that I have, and this testimony reinforces that concern all over again. The way that we are currently structured, the health licensing boards are down in the Ways and Means Education Committee. That is not a health policy committee. It's the Education Committee. And so you don't necessarily have people on there, which is not to diminish the expertise of anyone there, but you don't necessarily have people there with the expertise to ask and frame the right questions. So again, I'm just surfacing that again for us to consider, and thank the witness for bringing the issue forward.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Chair.
And Robert Ingram wanted to testify to it. We are supposed to adjourn at 10, but if you can make salient points, I'd appreciate it. So Rob Ingram can come up too. Go ahead.
Madam Chairperson, my name is Karen Peterson, and my stand is with Right for Self-Determination. Much trouble wanting to come off. I'm off medication, live on health food, good water, exercise. I'm a normal person that is a voice hearer, and the medication itself was more nightmare than the voices themselves. I'm finding that the medication was much more nightmare than the voices themselves, the 10 years that, and I kept saying no, 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 and both care coordinator, counselor, medical doctor, and prescriber were saying, oh, if you hear voices, we need to stop it. And in the stopping it, it made me more dysfunctional than the voices themselves, which for me, in time, we're abating a bit, and I feel like I have better chance of becoming a taxpayer and working a job in time, and I felt that obstruction frustrating, and because it, I think the funds are going through them to help manage the budgets, you know, to get to the consumer themselves, and I found the middle management area almost completely coddling, wanting you on meds, and to sit there in a stupor. And I wasted 10 years. I am two years off medication on health food, exercise, good water, hear voices. Not that obstructive. And I found that very frustrating. So I would like to testify. I'm testifying for the rights for self-determination and become a healthy taxpayer without all that medication that caused so much damage that makes me sometimes want to go, you know, you broke it, you fix it. And I think I'm still healthy enough to keep trying.
Wonderful.
Thank you very much. That's the goal of these two bills. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Senator and the Chair and Board. My name is Rob Ingram. I'm the Director of Empowerment Initiatives. We're a small nonprofit in Portland that was actually started by the Real Choice Grant a few years back. We run two programs. the Spirit Program, which is a training program for peer-to-peer support, and also the Brokers Program. And there's a few terms that we use, self-care, recovery, peer support, freedom, and independence. And I'm here to support and testify about Senate Bills 363 and 364 because I believe this is an opportunity for the Senate to give place in the budget and in the laws and the bylaws of the state in support of those same issues. Thank you very much.
Thank you. This has been extremely valuable testimony for me as an individual in trying to figure out where we're going to go from here. So thank you all very much for coming. We've taken it to heart what you said, and hopefully we're going to be able to do some good work. Yes, Senator Gordley.
Thank you. I would just like to acknowledge and thank Mr. Ingram for the work that you do through empowerment initiatives. A family member has benefited greatly from the support offered by your program, and appreciate your leadership and invite your participation and everyone here who came to testify today, your participation in the Mental Health Caucus. We need your voice and guidance there. Thank you.
Yes?
I'm also in their Spirit Program.
Oh, you are?
Which they're okay that I'm health food and clean water and exercise.
Thank you. Okay. Meeting's adjourned.